back to another episode. I think we're at 12. 12 now, which just means I'm actually serious about doing this. Thank you to everybody that has been supporting and giving me the views and the subs and the follows and the streams and the downloads. I appreciate it. We've got a couple of Patreon supporters as well. Thank you very much. If you'd like to help and support the podcast so I can carry on doing it, then there is a link below in the video. If you're watching this on YouTube, if you're listening to it on Spotify or iTunes or podcast apps in general, go and check out the YouTube. You can watch all these podcasts. But yeah, if you want to support and help the podcast out, make sure I can carry on doing this and record and edit and try and upgrade some of the quality of everything, then your support is much appreciated. But we're going to get into this next episode. And we are here in Pirate Studios in Greenwich with someone I've known quite a while now. Very interesting man, multi-talented person. Jams, what's good?
What's going on?
How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. I'm busy. Just keeping up stuff.
Have to be.
Have to be. Have to be busy. I can't keep still, bro.
No resting on the laurels.
Nothing like that at all.
Mr. I Am Grime.
Yes.
When's the first time I met you? I want to say in my head it was when you came up to Kiss.
With Aaron, the novelist. Yes. Yeah, 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 yeah. That was time ago. That was like 2010.
Like, oh, wait. Oh, was that 10? Yeah.
No, it might have been slightly before that.
9, 10. That was a graphic design thing, wasn't it?
Yeah. I was helping out Aaron and Nov with a couple of bits them times, yeah. That was a long time ago.
It was indeed. Yeah, so I've known you for a while.
Randomly popped up on a session with you and Nico one day as well.
Yeah.
Remember that, yeah.
Sick.
Yeah, so it's been quite a while, man.
So I said a man of many talents. That's something I definitely want to get into on a podcast because, like, you've always been pretty self-sufficient, and I think that's something that's always worked well in grime. You have the likes of, like, Jeremy, Jammer, Skepta, Wiley, famous producer slash artists.
Yeah.
But you all do graphic design as well, so, like, top to bottom, you don't really need to speak to anybody to get a release out.
I don't. Technically, I don't.
If you wanted.
If I wanted to be, I have the power. But, like, I'm learning that is not always the best way to work in it.
Yeah.
So, like, delegation and time management and all of that.
I feel like understanding how things work is good though, because it means that when you're delegating jobs to other people, you know how it should be done.
Oh, 100%, 100%. Anyone that's worked with me will tell you I'm very specific about things. 100% specific. But yeah, like, there's not much that I haven't attempted to try to do for myself in the realm of like music or anything I've done in the past like 5, 6 years.
Especially nowadays when you like we all have to keep the cost down as well.
So yeah, exactly.
It's good to be able to do things for yourselves. So yeah, when did you start recording and releasing music? I don't like to ask people when they started doing music because like you're going back to spat bars on the playground and that. But like,
yeah,
when did you start
that one
recording
times,
and releasing music yourself?
My first thing I recorded that I put out ever was actually a freestyle in 2008, 2009. I done a freestyle. Then I came to college the next week, everyone knew the bar, so I done an EP, 3-for-1 sampler. Then a year later, 2010, done my first mixtape, What's the Latest. Then I done the first I Am Grime project. So I Am Grime wasn't a label at first, it was just an EP, because I think like that was a time where all of like the older guys in the scene that was doing it, they was having their commercial run. So there was that whole like Grime is dead. So like I made that. I was like,
need to get the music on one extra daytime playlist.
Yeah, it was all of that. It was Rolexes and that. So I thought, you know what? Like, if I'm gonna make an entry, I'm going to make an entry, and this is my statement. I am Grime. So this is me. Yeah. So that was the first one. Then I done two more. So yeah, like early 2010 was probably.
Were you making beats yourself as well then as well?
Yeah, I've been producing like for the longest.
Okay.
Yeah.
What did you start out on?
Started out on. The first thing I ever touched was Cubase, but the first thing I actually sat down and took time with was The Reason.
Okay.
And I've stuck with it till this day.
And when was that?
I like 2004.
Okay.
Yeah, so I'm deep in the producing game still.
So that's a couple years after the heyday of FL3.
Yeah, I didn't really get on with FL, not going to lie.
Yeah.
Didn't really get on with it.
I remember
it.
Reason. One of the people I know used to use Reason. Yeah, so now, fast forward 2019, and you're very established. I feel like you're part of the... Like, you're part of the furniture now. You're just there about continually putting stuff out. I'm always hearing new stuff from you, new projects, and, like, new ideas as well.
Yeah, man. I don't know. The new ideas, but it's what keeps it exciting, isn't it? Like, I don't like to really do the same thing over and over again. Hence why I do so many different things. Like, I just like finding the thrill in something and just chasing that. And then when that's done, I'll find something else to do.
Production is going really well as well. I remember, like, things probably took off onto a next level when you did Keep It Simple Stupid. I know that got, like, mad attention.
That and The World.
Yes.
That and The World were like the first.
Was The World the one that I played when I went to New York with Skepta and that?
No, that was Keep It Simple. Yeah, that rip done a lot. Yeah. That rip done a lot for me. I've had a couple like clips of people spitting. I've got like Skepta spitting over that a couple of times. Stormzy's on it, Nov's on it.
Yeah, they like that a lot.
Still. Yeah, like that. Do you know what? Like, I have this weird thing. Like, a lot of the tunes I make, they seem to stick around. Like, even to this day, people told me like that's one of their favorite instrumentals like of all time. Do you know what I'm saying? So.
And then nowadays, obviously, everyone's getting gassed over the
French Montana
loop two.
Loop two, yeah. That was just a little 10 minute loop. A 10 minute loop. Yeah, no, that was made in 10 minutes. Yeah, it was made in 10 minutes. Me and Jack made that in like 10 minutes.
That's
like,
been around for a while though, because I remember hearing that like not last year, like I think the year before maybe.
Yeah.
I swear I heard a Montana rhythm of quite like a good.
It's been around for about 2-3 years.
Yeah, it's
been building gradually. Like, when I put out tunes, I don't really like to think in the mind frame of, all right, cool, like I'm making this for playlists on whichever station. Like, I like to, like, back in the day when people put tunes out, there was definitely like a 6 month period where the tune was just getting circulated and it would just build naturally. So I try to make music with that intention in mind.
Yeah, I feel like artists nowadays have got they put a lot of pressure on themselves to like make stuff work immediately. You know, like,
yeah,
this is my new single and I'm going to do the campaign and the video's already shot and, you know, we're going to get it here, it's going to get premiered here. And if it doesn't do millions of streams, then like it's a flop. And that must just be such a stressful way of creating, because at the end of the day, you are still artists and creatives. Like, you're not just machines putting out tunes via a formula to success and create money.
It's about knowing when to apply that formula though, isn't it? Like, what kind of tune it is, what you want the tune to do. Like, you got to take all of that stuff into consideration. But like, the whole reason I have a radio show is so I can test things like this, like, and see what's gonna work and what's not gonna work in what environment. You know what I'm saying?
So right now you're doing the show on Rinse with Jack.
So you got I'm Graham Show on Rinse.
But yeah, radio is another thing that you've definitely been a big proponent of.
Yeah,
I remember you were definitely at the forefront of that radio revolution in like 2015, I'd say. 2015 is a good year.
To 14, 15. Yeah. That was, yeah.
Like, Radar definitely put that on the map.
But before positively. Radar, though, I think like Radar was like the peak of it.
Yeah,
Radar was definitely the peak of it. But before that, there's any and every station I could get on. I was there. I was there. Mode, Flex, Kemet FM in Nottingham. Went to see Silk City to check Big Mikey. All these places, like, doing mad journeys, not even knowing I was going to get home sometimes just to go and spit bars, bruv. So, yeah, I've definitely done my rounds on the radio circuit, so to speak, bruv. Yeah.
Yeah, so that's good to hear as well, because, like, I just spoke to P Money for the last episode. I was talking to him about grinding, which is the anthem. That's the gospel truth. And yeah, anyone that's ever done anything has had to make them sacrifices, had to go out of the way, that amount of work. Like, that is standard.
Dude. Yeah, I think that's standard. If you want to, that's with anything in life though, isn't it? Like, just apply yourself. Like, I think I've sacrificed so much stuff to do music, bro. I couldn't even tell you where it ends. But if you know it's what you want to do, then it's worth it in the end.
The Broke for Graham segment of this podcast is going to be full up of stories. We'll get to that. We'll get to that. So, like, coming through that pirate radio, internet radio, really, that kind of era was more internet radio. What did you learn from doing that?
Do you know what? Like, that really helped me with my performance, man. Like, by the time, like, I properly started to get bookings, I was confident. I was fine because I'd done so many hours of radio. It's like, there's no situation that you can put me in that I'm going to get so nervous that I don't want to MC in front of people. And even then, like, as well as MCing on radio, there's a hosting element, which is also good for live crowds. So, like, that stuff helped me a lot. But more so, it was more meeting people and just building networks. That was actually it. Like, a lot of the people that I met off on radio are all doing something now. Do you know what I'm saying?
And they're all peers as well.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, 100%.
Because I find that, like, sometimes when people are coming through, they want to like shoot for the stars, and that's good.
Yeah.
To want to shoot for the stars, but like, it's always beneficial to build that network of people that are in and around your kind of level as well, and have strength in numbers. And I feel like that was definitely something that was noticed. Like you said, you'd be putting the graft in, but by the time Radar came around and you kind of had like a base where you could just go and really showcase this kind of unit, this impromptu unit that you'd created of like-minded MCs and DJs that, you know, it really launched off. And, you know, I was, at the same time, I started doing the... Was it 60 Minutes that I got you guys down for?
No, it was the Boiler Room. Oh, no, you got us down for 60 Minutes as well.
Because
that
was Zoo's first time on the BBC at all.
Yeah. Mad. I didn't even know that.
Yeah, told me that before. But yeah, the Boiler Room as well. Like, it's... that was cool to be able to do something in a space. Like, I felt at that time that I was doing that, like, it's even more mad now, but, like, the clubs were closing down.
Yeah,
there were
less and
less opportunities to get something different and experimental in a club space.
Yeah.
Because clubs were like, we're closing. So the ones that are left only really wanted to have guaranteed bankers coming in, like, spending
safe,
their money, going to sell tickets or whatever. Like, we're making money at the bar and getting grime MCs in, the crowd is not really a big bar spend. So it was hard to get a lot of events on in London. And I thought, let's move away from that and just put on an experience. And having something in ICA where top to bottom, it was interesting for all levels of grime fan, because you'd had like the headline act. Who was headlining on the Boiler
Room? It was P-Money and OGs.
Yeah, so you had like established people. And then you had, you know, exciting newer acts. I kind of did, I think it was like three or four people in the lineup. So it was like an established name, an emerging name, like brand new people, and like a producer kind of DJ to do
their audio
kind of thing. And I felt like, all these people are just coming down. They love grime. And the vibes were sick. Like, if you compare those ICA Boiler Rooms that I was doing for Keeping It Grimy to other Boiler Rooms where everyone's just... phone out, standing still, only getting hyped for like the turn up tunes.
Yeah, no, the
or
energy was definitely unreal.
It was nang,
in those
like
rooms.
To be able to do that. And I feel like they're really important, them kind of experiences, rather than the pressure of a rave. I need to sell tickets, all that stuff.
I feel like that's why Keep Hush is doing so well at the moment.
I definitely agree.
Yeah.
It's a really similar kind of feeling where they've got like a tribe of people that follow them. And if they put the right thing on, people are like applying to get down, and you definitely have that experience where if I'm not there, I feel like I've missed out.
Yeah.
That thing, what's that called? FOMO, fear of missing out. And like, it's completely opposite to all these free entry, Dalston, Kingsland Road, Shoreditch, free entry all night events where you're trying to ask people to come down and they're like, take it or leave it kind of thing.
Yeah.
You end up playing to 20, 30 people and it's a bit of a wash. But these kind of members, invite only kind of things, you take that, because really the door take is air, like £5 for 200 people, cool, a grand's nice, but you know, if you can get that from a sponsor, you're in an even better situation.
Yeah, exactly.
So yeah, like I definitely wanted to try different things in terms of live events, and 4 years down the line, there's even less clubs.
Yeah,
it's even harder. Mad. What's it like for you in terms of the live stuff? Because I know it's been ups and downs. You even did your own thing. Let's talk about that.
Oh, Warrior Tour. That was an interesting process. That was like, I don't know, I felt like it was kind of overdue for me to do a tour. Like, I put out the first Warrior in 2016, end of 2016. I had a headline show, went sick, rammed that, Old Blue lost. And then after that, like, I kind of just took a year to figure out what I wanted to do, because like the landscape of music in the UK was changing anyway. So like, I think at that time, like drill was coming in. So like, in terms of bookings, like the lineups were changing as well. So I was playing different types of shows them times. So like, I would be on mad lineups.
And what type of lineups? Because I'd imagine they're not the sort of lineups that like drill is getting booked on.
There was a phase where I went through. I was definitely on some lineups of like 6-7.
Okay.
On lineups with like musicians from those kind of things, and then
so they're like rap based MC
lineups.
Lineups. Okay.
So there was those, and then
at the same time you're doing like those Bristol bass kind of, maybe a bit of dubstep, a bit of left field, going down with like Grand Mixer and them kind of setups there.
Yeah, that was at the Spookies. Same time, but more so because like it was my first experience of being on an agency. I was getting to do those big lineups alongside like the small basement raves in Bristol and Manny and that. So I kind of just watched that change, and then I thought, you know what, it's sick doing all these shows, but like I feel like because I was doing the club circuit consistently for like 2-3 years, it was kind of like, cool, like I've done this now, like I can continue to do this, or I can take it up a level and try and do something better and advance. So like when the tour happened, I really wasn't even thinking about a tour. I was more so just thinking about the promotion of the EP, like because I think about things backwards. So like before I'd even made the music, I'd had all the artwork and stuff done for it. And then I kind of just worked my way backwards, and then the t-shirts happened spontaneously. And then I got a friend who works at Crosstown Concerts, and he was like, yo, like you should just pop off a tour. And I was like, what do you lot think I can do? They was like, yeah. So I was like, cool, let's do it then. So we just done it like that. So we just kind of I think Crosstown kind of locked in the venues for us, and then apart from that, it was just super organic. We was just out on the road. I organized all of the travel, the accommodation.
So that was like a minibus thing. So
yeah, it was a minibus. I got hired out the minibus.
And again, it's people that you're networking with and working with anyway. So it's like that kind of set mentality, that grime set mentality of, you know, we all know each other anyway. I see you every other week, every other, you know, exactly, set anyway. So
and I feel like the thing with that tour as well, it was, yes, it was about my release, but I know people don't get to see lineups like Jams, YGG, Mike Ty, General Courts, and all like, or whoever we had on the tour, like,
yeah,
they don't happen as much as they used to, and people ask me for that all the time. So
because
like that
the opportunity is not there for them. Exactly. It's not that.
There's no space for it in certain places. So I was like, cool, like seeing as it's my tour, like let's just bring everyone. Like I can't just be me by myself. You know what I mean? So yeah, to that end, it was sick. It was a sick tour, but like it showed me a lot about what goes into actually putting on the tour. Like yes, the company helped us, but there is only so much they will help you with. The rest of it is like when you're out on the road, and you're having to figure out like why a hotel room hasn't been booked, and you're having to do logistics. Like this, that's not me being an artist anymore. Yeah. This is me doing like tour logistics.
Your manager hat's on.
Yeah, my manager hat is on now. So, and then the merch hat is on as well because I'm in charge of that and all of that other stuff. So yeah, it was a big learning curve, but it was sick. I feel like every city had a vibe, and that was the most important thing to me. I wasn't really trying to think about, yes, I was thinking about numbers, but I was more thinking about, cool, like everybody who comes here just has to have a sick time. And that we achieved it.
I think that's a super healthy way of looking at things, man. Like,
because it will grow.
Yeah, you're just looking at the quality of what you're doing and not focusing on the numbers. That's a people get lost in the numbers, man.
Yeah, no, I've been there. I think everyone's been there. But like, you get lost in the numbers and you realize, bro, the numbers ain't gonna come if it's not organic. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, if you focus on making your thing organic, the numbers will come at some point, I believe, anyway, because, like, if the product's good, people are going to come back. So focus on making the product A1.
Yeah, I think you can't focus on numbers too much. Like, it's nice when they come in, celebrate them, but, like, even down to music videos and stuff, people are, like, chasing, like, they compare. It's really hard to not compare, right? Especially when everything's tracked now. Like I can go on Spotify and see how many streams your music's done, which is I could never do that before.
That's
like,
mad, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, I can go on YouTube and say, oh yeah, your video had 20,000, but my man's got 50,000. Oh, you know what I mean?
But you know, even on a mental level, yeah, you can't watch numbers because you're just gonna let yourself down every time. Like it's, you hit one number and it's like, cool, like what's the next big thing, and you keep chasing the next one and the next one. You're just setting yourself up for failure in that sense, I feel like sometimes. Like it's good to have an aim and a goal, but I don't believe everything you do should be based on getting higher numbers. Like focus on everything else, the numbers will follow.
Yeah, because then the goal is just more.
Yeah,
like you're just chasing more rather than I have a specific, like I want to achieve this, I want to perform here, I want to get a feature here, I want to get to play there. It's like I just want more, like, and that becomes like a unhealthy way of progressing. It's very like contrary to art as well.
Exactly.
Like your creative process, you start chasing algorithms and what are GRM Daily putting on the platform and in the channel. Like I need to make more music that sounds more like this because that's what's going on right now. And my man's getting 1 million views in a week and my thing got 15K, but you know, I'm seeing blah 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 on all these festivals. I need to go over it, and it can have an adverse effect on what you're creating.
Yeah, but then you have to look at it like this. Cool, like you can conform to what everybody else is doing to get numbers, but if you're if you've got workout that you don't like and the work pops off, you're going to have to live with that tune for however long it pops off. And I don't know if I could live with that, bruv. Like, performing a tune that I've made that I don't like, that I only did for the numbers, it just makes it worse.
We all follow Wiley on social media, mate.
Yeah.
We all follow Wiley on social media, bruv.
But that's just me personally. But yeah, everyone's different. But that's just not how I approach things.
Yeah, it's a weird one, man. But you're absolutely enjoying what you're doing, right?
Yeah, I'm loving it, man. Like, I feel like, because I do so many different things, like, if I get bored of one thing, I can just jump onto something else, do that for a bit.
What other things do you do?
At the moment, I'm writing a play.
Yeah, let's talk about that, actually, because I remember seeing the pictures of it, and I ended up missing it, but the...
Poet in the Corner,
that's what it was on. It was in the corner something.
Yeah, Poet in the Corner, so I was in a play in the Royal Court, end of last year, it was like a 4-week run.
Mm.
It was a 6, actually. I've got co-writing credits in it as well.
Nice.
Big up my brethren Debris, who actually wrote the play. It was a sick experience. Sick experience. Like, allowing me to bring grime into an arena where it doesn't typically live, and seeing how it resonates.
How was it received?
It was sick. I think, like, on the first week, when we had the first press week, like, the reviews come out. I think the first review to come out was like Evening Standard, like 5-star review, like, and then overnight, like, all the tickets sold out, and I've had nothing but positive feedback. Like, people are happy to go into a space like that where they don't see it and connect with it. And then there's people who've never even heard of grime before and have seen it as a way, as like a form of art to communicate something. And like, I want to know more about this thing. So like, that makes me happy within myself, knowing that, cool, I'm actually expanding the width and breadth of what I'm doing. Do you know what I'm saying?
I feel like that attitude is something that we kind of lose when you're immediately close to it as well. Where,
yeah,
like, you'll show grime to these artsy people and they will accept it for what it is. Like, it's just a form of expression. It's music. It's art. They'll listen to it. They'll take it in. They'll get it, or they won't. But it's not like a judgmental thing. Whereas, like, you'll kind of show it to people that are closer to it and they'll kind of dismiss it. They're closed-minded of it.
Yeah.
It must be nice to take the culture somewhere different and see that there are people that do see it for what it is.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know, bruv. Everyone's always talking about, oh, grime is dead, grime is dead. Like, so what are you doing to further it? Do you get what I'm saying? So I don't really like to complain about things. I just like to go and do shit. Do you get me?
What else you got going on?
Obviously, you've got the Warrior merch. That's there. We've got the bucket hats, T-shirts.
Bucket hat champion.
Trust me. But even though I'm wearing a woolly hat now, those will be arriving
on
soon.
On a move.
But doing that, getting into youth work as well. So at the moment, I'm running a project with Nike and the Hackney Empire.
Okay.
Doing some artist development, like, using sport, which is sick. So I'll be able to tell you more about that soon. But yeah, so I'm trying to...
Have you done much youth work before?
No. So funnily enough, when I was doing Poet in the Corner, like, I met someone who put the idea of doing youth work into my head. Big up Temi Marley, and kind of just challenged me to see how I can use my influence to, like, make change, like, or just to, like, do something good. So yeah, man, it kind of got me thinking. So that's how I kind of come up with the idea for that project. But in general, like, I want to, even without all the youth work stuff, like, ask any, like, one that knows me, like, if I know the answer to something, I'll tell you. I'd rather you know than go through 7 years of learning to do it like I did. You know what I'm saying? So, like, get the cheat codes and pass them on.
Yeah, I hear Skepta talk about that a lot.
Yeah,
if you know, codes, if you know the shortcuts, like, share them. Let people. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
Pass it on, man. Don't hold them in, bruv.
What's been the best cheat code you've ever been shown, and who was it from?
I've been shown so many, bruv.
What was the most beneficial to your life?
The most beneficial to my life. Let me see.
And or career.
I can't say it's one thing. This, you know, it's so many small bits of information that I put together to, like, make my formula. Do you get what I'm saying? So, like, things that stick with me, like, P Money said to me, cool, the game is a pre, like, watch and you'll see the patterns. That one was like, cool, like, instead of asking what to do, the answers are actually already there. Do you get what I'm saying? All you got to do is observe and see. That was one. Boy, there's bear, man. We'll have to come back to that one at the end. There's bear. There's so much stuff, like, even stuff down to, like, distribution, learning how radio plugin works, learning how, like, radio playlists work. Like, big up Iron, like, showed me about radio playlists and how to play that game. Yeah, man, so many different things that alone they mean nothing, but when you put them together, it makes a difference.
I feel like it's been something like with grime in general, where every generation coming through, like, you're all starting kind of from scratch.
And yeah.
That information does trickle down, but it's slow because as like my generation, Wiley, Skepta kind of generation, well, I suppose, yeah, Wiley's a generation above Skepta, but like that kind of Wiley era where they basically had nothing from like garage kind of X-ing them out and being on their own and starting from scratch on pirate radio and in their own dances and stuff, because there wasn't a lot of crossover between like two-step house and G and underground crews and garage and stuff. Like, all these people are coming through and they're not used to being in big studios or putting their own records out and stuff. And it's like, as you pick something up, you'll share it. And it's like generational learning rather than any kind of real infrastructure that we have. Like,
But
we
I
don't
like
have a lot of like big labels in grime.
No, we don't.
Like grime labels or like a bunch of professionals, industry professionals. Most of the stuff learned is from artists and people that are creating stuff rather than like, oh, I can go and talk to this guy who runs this label or this promoter and that. And there's not a lot of that. And I feel like that's one of the things that we really miss, because that's all mad subjective. Like what you've been through as an artist yourself in your own career doesn't necessarily apply to everybody.
It's not going
to
be the same experience for everyone. It's definitely not.
Whereas if you've done the same thing, like Iron, that's a great example. Yeah. Iron's done the same thing for hundreds of artists.
Yeah, exactly.
So he's got a wealth of experience to go, well, actually, like, yeah, this, and this. But when you are one MC or DJ or producer, it's like, this is what happened for me. And it probably, the likelihood is it doesn't apply to you or you or you. But, you have to use your own brain to pick at what bits do apply to you.
Exactly.
And that's the skill.
And that's for me why it's important, why like you need to have a group or a peer group around you, because like imagine like you have one question, you can go and ask five people the same question, like the just numbers wise, probability wise, you're gonna get an answer you want as opposed to asking one person. Do you get what I mean?
Yeah, I think that's a massive point. You know, it brings us back to that networking and your peers, communicating with your peers. It can work for people that are like an island on their own and just doing everything in house, but that shared collective experience, you all learning together, coming through stronger as well, cross-promoting everything, and people will notice you in different places as you go, yeah, it's mad strong. And that's kind of advice that I always try and give artists when I speak to them, like, especially when they're coming through, super important to reach out and build them links with people at similar levels so that you can come through and help each other build like that.
That's it. And I always say to people, like, in 2014, if it was just me by myself, that wouldn't have been what it was. If it was just Big Zoo by himself, that wouldn't have been what it was. If it was just PK by himself, do you get what I'm saying? So strength in numbers, trust.
How are things noticeably different for you now in 2019 than they were in 2014, 15?
In terms of what?
Just for you, like how you perceive things.
Do you know what? Music is just one of the things that I do now. I have to like really think about where I put my time, like with music being, it's mad because everything I do feeds back into music and it feeds back into other places. So like even with the theatre stuff that I'm doing, because like a lot of the stuff I'm writing about, I want to incorporate grime into the theme of it, it's feeding back into my music. Like for example, when I done Poet in the Corner last year, I had a whole load of like vocal coaching from a professional vocal coach, like how to stand and all of this stuff, how to breathe. That's fed back into my live performances.
Oh,
as,
sick.
As a grime MC.
Breathing patterns, projection of voice. Project,
all of that stuff, clarity. So
I need some breathing help.
Yeah, that helps. All the design stuff that I've done in the past, again, feeds back into when I need releases, like I've got other artists on my label that I can now do that for and help them. Do you get what I'm saying? So I feel like now I'm trying to transcend into other things. Like, I feel like as an artist today, you can't just be an artist. You've got to do other stuff as well, like to elevate yourself as a brand.
Super difficult to
like,
just
you
be
can't just exist as a grime MC by yourself out here and like feel like that's enough. Like, I'm not saying it's impossible.
Yeah, you're at a disadvantage.
You're at a disadvantage if you do that.
Because, like we said, the infrastructure's not there. Like, the professionals are like not there. The people to go and do all them other jobs, they're not really there.
They're
so
not there, and it's mad as well because like the more of these different spaces that I go into, people want to interact with this thing that we do, but sometimes don't always know how. So it's good to kind of float around in different worlds, and because then you can just meet different people and just you know how much people I've met like through the theatre and doors that have opened to more like stuff where I'm using Gram, like I'm even talking about like producing a play at the moment. Sick. So like soundtracking stuff like, so it's mad.
Yeah, man, I feel like people definitely don't know how to engage with Gram a lot of the time because it's, whilst it's such an insular scene, like a small knit community, it's also like not really got a central base. So people don't know to where to go for it. Like,
yeah,
there's not an obvious kind of, well, I'll go there and talk to that person or that person.
I think the most recent place that was like that was Radar, innit, really?
Yeah.
Like, that was a hub.
And you saw how much opportunities they got off the back of that.
Off the back of, 100%.
Being like such a focal point for new grime and new artists coming through, you know, I immediately saw...
Tunes have come out of, like, people just being in the same place at the same time, be like, oh, my days, I've heard of you, but I've never met you, let's just jump in the studio.
Yeah, let's do a jump. And that's, like you said, that's the organic thing.
Yeah.
And I feel like, you know... going beyond that, outside of Grime, I feel like people are passively into Grime. Like, they like the idea of Grime. They like the concept of Grime.
Yeah.
But they're not really engaged with Grime in that, you know, they're not really checking for new stuff.
Yeah. Like, do you know what? For a lot of people today, I think it's just like this nostalgic thing that they hear in the club and it brings them back to a place in their teens or whatever. But, like, I don't know if it's like...
Well, we kind of got, like you said, with Radar, that... place kind of
shut things up,
re-emerged
a bit. Yeah, it did. It 100% did.
What was that like for you when everything like just done out with Radar?
Do you know
you
what?
You were a very important part of good things that happened at Radar.
100%. Do you know what? I feel like my time there was coming to an end anyway. So
why is that?
Like, the show was just getting moved around, like, and I feel like in general, I feel like they were moving away from the Grime thing by that point anyway. It was kind of like what happened at Rinse or Deja when like they moved away from the Grime and it was like there's other genres here now that are taking over. So they had like a lot more talk show based stuff. So I was kind of naturally thinking, cool, like maybe this is the end of the radio run, like time to...
Why does that happen with Grime? Because like...
I don't know. I feel like Grime is the thing that draws people in and then it's like a platform to do other stuff. But like, do you know what? I don't think there's anything wrong with like naturally progressing and wanting to do other music. At the same time, though, I do feel like, you know, it was Grime that got this thing here. Like, pay a bit more respect than you show it.
That's
you
the thing, like, not at the expense of...
Yeah, not at the expense of Grime. Like, don't make it at the expense of it. Because without it, this wouldn't be like this.
Because
so.
I remember speaking to Zoo about it outside Maydevale once, and he's like, yeah, they said that, like, this time slot, for example, like this time slot, there's always going to be a Grime show in this time slot, and then it kind of got moved and it went there. And you know, like they're putting the shows on weird times and there's not as many shows.
Yeah.
And of course, yeah, if you're going to diversify the sound, there's not going to be as many shows of one sound, but when you're getting all these opportunities and these festival stage takeovers and you know, corporate partnerships with companies and stuff, predominantly off the back of having all this hype from all these new artists and MCs coming through, then it's a weird one, man. Like,
but do you know what, though? Like, see, with that whole situation, a part of it was that it grew too quickly for itself to maintain. I feel like that everything happened in such a short space of time. Do you get what I'm saying? Like,
it's an interesting one as well, because there's a lot of the same people that were working at Rinse that went over to work there as well. And you're going to naturally have a lot of the same influences musically where... You know, Rinse definitely wasn't as relevant for Grime in 2010 to 2015. I don't think as well. You kind of had like Spyro holding it up with a Grime show, which was sick.
But even if you talk about the lifespan of Radar compared to Rinse FM, how long it took them to build up to the point where they are now, like Radar.
Money.
Yeah, bruv. So
North Money.
Pure of it. So, yeah, man, that was that, really.
Definitely helps you fast track to next levels and next levels and next levels, man.
Well, you gotta know what you're doing as well.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? So, yeah, man. I think like that was an era. Served a purpose. That time is done. So I think now it's just about looking ahead and trying to see what the next thing is, or trying to create the next thing. That's where my brain is always at. Like, once I've done something, it's like, cool. Like, let's not be stagnant here. Like, let's move on to the next thing.
What do you think that is when it comes to grime? Because obviously the next thing for you is diversifying and working on lots of projects that cross-pollinate with your grime influences.
Yeah.
But when it comes to like when you look at grime, what do you think it needs?
More unique ways of consuming it, man. I feel like, cool, radio is cool.
Do people listen to radio anymore?
People stream more, I feel like, now. Like, I feel like people definitely still listen to things like Mode FM, Flex FM, definitely BBC One Extra, like on that end of the scale. But everything, in my personal opinion,
do you think?
Like, definitely in the car. Like, radio is more. I feel like radio is definitely might be more in the car, but that's I don't know. I might be wrong.
No, I agree, but like,
but everything is so more accessible now.
Yeah, if something's kind of confined to the car, that's
yeah.
How much of your time of your day do you spend in the car? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's also a good point. But like, everything's very streaming based now. Yeah. Everything's very accessible. Like, you can download a tune off iTunes, and if you delete it, you can get it back tomorrow. Whereas if you bought a CD and you fucked it up, that was it, bruv.
Yeah.
Like, you got to go and spend money and buy another one. And I feel like a lot of what I do is focused on bringing the value back to what I do.
I was just going to say as well, like, back in the day when you get a CD, there was a value because you had to pay.
You remember the experience of going to get that CD,
yeah,
and when
there's
it was.
It's a physical manifestation of a time, of a place,
yeah,
of an experience. Whereas like streaming, Jams drops a new project, my free Spotify premium subscription I get from my mobile contract or my uni or whatever it is, I can just stream that up and listen to it, and it's kind of like there's no investment in me with this music.
Yeah,
which is why I feel like live experiences are really important.
Super important. That's why merch is important.
Yeah,
that's why I got into the merch,
because
it's like
music.
You attach something to the music, and then all of a sudden, like, there's a physical thing to remember it by. Every time you see this item, you're automatically gonna think this song or this artist. I just think it works so much better in terms of making music more memorable. I think like what JME done with debuting all his videos in the cinema, that was a sick way of getting people to consume the music. The whole fact that you can only see it once, so that as soon as you get in there, you know, all right, boom, I need to be paying attention because I might never see this again. Like, stuff like that, I think, is super sick.
And then at the same time, you've got like the speed at which music's turned over as well.
Yeah,
where like back in the day when you're saving up as a kid, you're saving up for a CD, that might be the only thing you can get that month. Like £15, £12, whatever it was for that CD. That might be the only thing you get that month, realistically. Now, everything that comes out, you've got access to right away.
Straight away,
innit? Every day. Every week, there's new stuff coming out from your favourite artists. New artists coming through all the time. And it's just like you're getting swamped. Swamped in stuff. And at the same time, people are not releasing a lot of grime either. So you're competing with a lot of shit that's coming out there. I don't mean shit like that. Like a lot,
yeah,
you compete
yeah,
with a lot of releases.
Yeah, a lot. It's
because, like you said, everything's kind of. People don't just listen to one thing anymore. They listen to music. So
yeah, exactly. There's no boundaries anymore.
Like, you go on GRM Daily and there might be a Yeezy video. I know that dropped today, but like whatever. There might be a video up there, but there's gonna be 4 or 5 drill videos on there, a couple of Afro Bashment ones, and that'll be like the one grime video. And
by the end of the day, that video is at the bottom.
Yeah.
That's the mad
tomorrow
part.
It's gone.
Yeah.
Next week it's a myth.
It's gone, so it's like, how do you make it last?
Yeah, it's hard.
Yeah. Do you know what? That's why I've opted to do like the vinyl stuff, because it lives in its own world outside. Like, if I do something on vinyl, a lot of the time I won't put it out on digi. Like,
for real?
Yeah. So like, when I done...
What about us DJs, man, that don't play nothing on fucking vinyl anymore?
Oh, then that's what mailing lists are for, bro. He like, hit me up. I got you. But like, when I put out, so if, for example, I put out Warrior 2 in October,
yeah,
I put the vocals out on Digi, and then I put the vinyls at instrumental, and then attached to that is a free digital download of a
code.
Tune. when you get so there's an incentive there for you to go and get the vinyl and the digi. Do you know what I'm saying? Yeah. So it's being smart in ways like that, like trying to make people care in that way again.
I love all that shit because like that's marketing taken from other places as well.
Yeah,
you know what I mean,
yeah,
like,
yeah, definitely.
I want you to buy this one and this one, and there's a reason to buy both. And we're kind of, you're working extra hard as well because you have to. It's not like, if you want to get the vocal version, well, here's the first verse and first chorus on this one, and you got to buy the other one to get the second verse. You're not breaking up like a prick like that, like some games do, or do you know what I mean? Like
yeah,
other types
have a
of
disc
media.
One and a disc two. Yeah.
But you are literally having to create extra work to and I kind of noticed that when we went from vinyl to mixtapes because, like, I watched Wiley drive around with one-sided white labels and get £6 up front in cash
Mad
per
for
unit
one-sided white
for
label.
A one-sided white label that they would then sell for £10-12, and literally within the space of about 18 months it went from that to 12 track mixtape for a fiver. Do you know what I mean? And it's like, well, I used to be able to make one tune, maybe two tunes, and sell that for £6, maybe £3.50 if you're just a normal don selling to distributors. Now I've got to do 12 tunes, and I've got to press them up front on CD, and I'm getting like £2.50 for
the
whole package.
But don't you think like that worked? That works because there's like, even back then, cool, like the internet existed, but because that music's not available on the internet, you have no choice but to go and seek out the vinyl. So them vinyls are going to shop whatever, do you get what I'm saying? And I feel like, it can still work today if you're smart about it, but I just don't think people take that approach.
I feel like it can work when you have something that people really want, or you have a brand that people want. Do you know what I mean? Like Burial, for example, can do that shit, or some of these other people where, like, or even Wiley. If Wiley sat in his yard now and made a beat that was Nang that sounded like a Wiley tune and said, yeah, I'm going to do an exclusive vinyl of this tomorrow, he'd sell 500 in a day.
Bruv, Slimzy's out here shotting dubs for mad
prices, one-offs,
bro.
20 like, units for a bill on that. I hear you.
Mad. So it's still doable, bro.
I hear you. Because you're not working on mass numbers.
Yeah, yeah.
You're working on something that's hyper-exclusive. You're actually adding value to it. And it's funny because we went from that, here's everything I've made on Sensebase kind of mentality.
Yeah.
Free downloads. To coming back round again. And that's one of the things that, you know, when people talk about, oh, the vinyl industry is back up, like vinyl is selling better. That's people just buying collectibles.
Bro,
no one's playing them vinyl.
No one's actually playing them. Do you know how many sales I get for vinyls that are like doubles and triples because like people definitely want a copy just to have. They don't even want to put it on the turntable because it's going to fuck
it up. That's why when I was doing the Earth 616 records, I made sure they're all like coloured vinyl and that for artwork because...
Make it look good.
I know
make
people
it look appealing.
That they want a collection. You know what I mean? Like stick it in. Oh, if you got the purple one. Oh, you got the blue one. Oh, yeah, sick. Oh, yeah, no, that one was Nang. You know, like, people are building up collections, like collections of comics. You don't have to. I'm a collector by nature. I collect everything, so I know.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I need every coloured Air Max that is released in the world.
It's just about, again, like you were saying a while ago, like knowing your audience and knowing what they're about. That's a big part of it. Like knowing your audience, their habits, what they listen to, why they listen to you. I feel like that's a big part of like selling anything in grime as well.
And nowadays you have immediate access to them numbers as
well. Which is mad. It's
so mad. You like kind of, if you want to put the work in, you can kind of see these trends and see, oh, what? I've got, all my listeners are mainly from London, but then the number two one is Birmingham and then the number three one is Bristol. When it comes to doing the tour, I'm sure you're looking at them numbers like...
Yeah, that's how I made the decisions on where I wanted to go. I went on Spotify and I looked at my numbers and again, it's mad that you have access to all of this information now because off that alone, you can build a set list because you can see which tunes are most popular in each city. Do you get what I'm saying? Like, even things like Bandcamp. Bandcamp is the sickest thing. I cannot keep stressing it. Like, every time someone buys something off your Bandcamp, you get an email address. That is the most direct way to deliver something to someone.
You're a man that had a website from early as well.
Yeah, that was the way. That was my entry into the game.
You had a website from early. You had a if you want to get the downloads,
go to iamgram.com.
Sign up,
and you, bro,
give me your details.
The mailing list that I got from that is still with me to this day.
Yeah,
to this day, it's building on it, man. Mailing list
to
this day, trust me. So yeah, no, like stuff like that, collecting data, super important, man.
and using it as well.
Yeah, knowing how to use it as well and when to use it.
Yeah, man. What other stuff you been working on anyway? Like,
oh, bare stuff. Just, I'm trying. I'm making instrumentals every week.
Can I get a re-up, please?
Yeah, everyone's asking me for a re-up.
Can I get a re-up, please?
Yeah, do you know, I only make loops now, you know.
Yeah, it's fine.
Yeah. I only make loops.
And I only play loops as well. It's all good.
If they bang on my rinse show, then I finish them. That's the rule.
They're demos. That's fine. That's how it should be. Dubs.
Yeah, that's why it's fun. I don't really try to make things with a finished product in mind unless it's like I'm doing a project or something.
Yeah, go back into the studio, open the file up again, put the edits in, structure it up, turn it into something else maybe. But yeah, for really what we're using it for, you only need 8-16 bar intro, drop,
exactly.
Cool. Maybe a little bit of change up after in the 24th bar. And
it just needs to be MC
moving.
Friendly, yeah. To be honest. The rest will follow. But yeah, doing that, making instrumentals, obviously, script writing, getting into screenplay and stuff like that. I bought a camera the other day.
Sick.
Yeah, man. Obviously, youth work and that. Yeah, man. Fingers in bare different pies at the moment.
Started a podcast.
Which
I know that.
Yeah, because you were just on it. Started a podcast as well, yeah. So I'm just trying bare different stuff at the moment, man. I feel like I'd say I've been in the game since 2014. I've been there 6 years, so I just want to try some different stuff just to keep it fresh, keep it fun. Because if it's not fun, then I'm not going to want to do it anymore. So
keep challenging yourself as well.
Exactly, yeah. That's where the growth comes. But
how old are you now?
28 now.
28?
Yeah.
28, soon approach.
Big man, but I'm not 30.
What, soon approach?
Trust me, round the corner, bruv.
You got
yeah.
Did you think you'd still be making music at the age of 30?
Well,
you might not be. You might become an international playwright, superstar producer.
I think now I'm at the point where I think I'll always do music.
Yeah, I can't see you stopping making music.
Yeah, like I've become such a poster boy.
But when you started, did you think, yeah, I'm going to be making music when I'm 30 years old?
No, it was like before that 2014, and then even when I was doing that, it was only when I got to the boiler room that I thought, do you know what, maybe I can take it seriously. Like, there was a moment before that where I went Fabric, and I watched it from the stage this time, and I was like, cool, like I want to try and do this. And then when I got to the boiler room, I was like, cool, like maybe I can take this a little bit seriously.
Do you still have goals now?
Oh yeah.
Musical ones,
definitely. Like, they're definitely like numbers goals and that, but it's more so,
yeah, like fuck numbers goals. I mean,
yeah, like, but more so, like, I just want to do sick bodies of work. That's all I want to do. Like, my work to me is like my legacy. So when I look back, when I'm whatever age, I'll be like, cool, I'm happy with that piece of work. Like, that is a what's the word? Like a marker at that time in life, but
milestone,
that's the word. But yeah, like, I just want to do sick bodies of work, but I want to definitely, like, my thing is cool, like, how do I take this thing to the next level now, which is partly why I'm doing the theatre stuff, so just doing different stuff with it, man.
How much international stuff you done? Because I had a great time with you in Australia, that was good.
Yeah, Australia was, man. We've done bare overseas stuff. We've done, you was at Berlin when I went to Berlin with Spy.
Yeah.
Kosovo, Portugal, that was a mad one. Where else have I been? I've been to so many places. I went to Munich the other day with Marcus Nasty. That was sick. Done Graham in America, bruv. That one, to me, gets me every time. Like, I got flown out to America for a day to do a house party. Like, 30 minutes.
Wow.
Like, I left work on Friday. I was back by Monday and nobody knew anything, bruv. You know, like that. Like, that's how deep it got. Played in New York. Yeah, man, I've done so much overseas. Obviously, Outlook, Croatia, France. Yeah, man, done bits. But I definitely, like, that's another thing as well. I think for this Gram thing to go to the next level, like, there's so many different Gram communities popping up in a lot of countries. Now we just need to join the dots. Do you get what I'm saying? I think that's the next thing, joining the dots.
What countries are still on the list that you ain't been to yet?
Japan, China.
Jeez. The Asia tour, yeah?
Yeah. Do you know what? That was meant to happen, obviously, that time we went out there, but it fell through, innit? When we went to Australia, I want to do Asia as well. I want to do, like, India.
Korea's cool.
Yeah, I want to go to, is it Cake Shop?
Yeah.
Seoul, I want to do that. That looks live. There's bear shows. Like, I definitely want to do some more festivals abroad as well. I definitely like to do, like, somewhere like Sonar Festival or something one day.
Barcelona's wicked.
Yeah, Yeah, so definitely just bigger shows, man. Bigger shows. But who don't want to do bigger shows, you know what I mean?
No, of course. Of course.
But
I just want more opportunities to play to people that care about the music as well.
Yeah.
Like, I'd love to... One of the things I'm working on at the moment is just, like, helping centralising information so that, you know, all these little pockets of people that kind of are into grime. Like, the people that are super into grime, cool. This is for you as well. But then the people that are passively into grime as well, I want to give them a bit more so that, you know, we're going... The thing that I hate the most is when I play somewhere and then the next day I'll get a tweet, oh, I didn't even know you were coming, bro. Oh, I'd have been on that.
Yeah, it's mad. Like, do you know what? So the other day somebody asked me, like, where do I go, like, if I want to see, like, everything that's going on in grime? And I actually had to sit down and think, like, there's not one single
place. You have to follow everyone.
Yeah, you got to follow everything.
Even then, like, trying to think the example that I had the other week. C4's EP was out and I didn't know because I didn't see the tweets.
Like, see, look, that's the first I'm hearing of that.
Yeah, like, he's got wicked... five-track kind of garagey EP, and yeah, if you're not tweeting, if you've got a release and you're not tweeting it every 3 hours, then you're gonna miss it.
It's dead.
It's hard.
and then you've got all of these different social platforms that you've got to post on as well. You've got to have, and sometimes it's long. I'm not gonna lie, it's long when you're thinking you've got to do all of this just for one single, bruv.
Yeah.
For one single. What about when I drop my album? What do I have to do when that comes out? Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, exactly. That's why a lot of these press agencies charge like bags, because it's a lot. But at the same time, once you learn how to do it, then you should be able to do it yourself. For me, I started up the Keeping It Grammy website a couple of times just to see how much work it was to do on my own, because it was literally on my own. And yeah, it was
running a vlog is tense.
Even with grime, like. Because I was very thorough as well. Like, I'd put the new Skepta video up next to the new 14-year-old kid from Northampton. Do you know what I mean? Like,
profiling.
Make sure that if it's happening in grime, it's on there. But I thought, I'm going to try it again. I'm going to have another go at it again. Card True, I've got a bit more free time now these days. but yeah, it's really important because people just don't know where to go. They don't know where to go for this shit. And I think these days you have to make it overly easy for people. Like, if your thing is not the thing that's popping the hardest at the moment, which, let's be honest, grime isn't.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like there's a drill.com and people can find out what's going on with drill, but it's what's going on. And but then, people will find out about it because it's being spoken about more naturally, organically.
Yeah.
But, like, with grime, people still like grime. They like good grime still. I think they still like good grime.
But then this leads on to another interesting point. Like,
go on.
There's a lot of miseducation on what grime is. And like clumping grime tunes together in playlists that are majority like other genres, like
grime shutdown on Spotify. That's what we're talking about. Let's like not shy away from the subject.
Not even just that, but I'm talking in general, like.
But that's like the tip of the iceberg.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean? That's
and
like
I
the
tempo.
Like, it says grime in the name, but same way you'll see articles that are top 20 tunes, grime tunes or grime
but
MC,
then, like,
blah blah blah.
Seven of them are drill and Afrobeats. Like, it don't make sense.
One of them will be American.
And like, I don't feel like that's good for new listeners to the genre. Like,
I don't feel it's respectful to them other sounds as well, because
100%.
You know what I mean? Like, when you're calling, I mean, I think it's got better now because these other sounds are so successful.
Yeah.
But and they're getting their own shine now, but. Do you know what I mean? When you're calling people like Krept and Conan and Giggs and Jay Huss, like people who in their own right have had enormous impacts on their sides of MC music.
Yeah, and have gone through their own trials and tribulations to get
like
there
for
as
a
well.
Lot, for a lot. They've done a lot to get there and the success, and then you're kind of calling their music grime, I feel, is disrespectful to them.
Mm. 100%.
And then you're kind of... I realised when I started playing out in... 2017, everything happened to me in 2017, but I realised I was playing out just after the summer of 2017 and I'm playing in clubs and I'll get through my Skepta, Stormzy, Kano, Jeremy, Lethal Bizzle segment, like the biggest, baitest grime I can play, and, you know, the club manager will say, like, oh yeah, can you play some commercial grime? And I'm like, what
the hell is that even,
I've just
bro?
Played everybody, bruv. And it took me about 6 months to realise what he meant.
They're not actually talking about grime.
No, they want me to play marimbas and that 70 BPM.
The triplets.
Doom, 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 doom kind of tunes. Like, because that's what they thought grime was at the time. And I feel it's getting better now. But there's a lot of muddying of the waters. And I think sonically it's understandable because, you know, a lot of the culture crosses over.
Yeah,
like so overlaps. Someone who doesn't understand music theory, the similarities between drill and grime are massive. They're massively similar.
Mm.
So I can understand why, but yeah, when you have platforms that should be putting out the right message and they're not, it definitely is hindrance.
Super hindrance, man. Super hindrance. But do you know what? I feel like it's definitely getting better. I feel like there just needs to be a central hub of information for what we do.
I'm definitely trying. I'm going to start it up again when I get back from America.
Like, there ain't really been nothing like that since Grime Forum on that level.
And even then, Grime Forum was just a forum. So you go on there and, you know, 3 days later, your post is on the third page and it doesn't exist.
Or even things like, do you remember Grimepedia? Grimepedia was actually quite a good
resource. Yeah, hold tight Lemon, hold tight Hitch.
Yeah, big up Lemon and Hitch, man.
Putting in Bear Graft on that. That's kind of my idea of like indexing everything that happens so you can search by artist name and producer name.
Yeah.
And all kinds of, like, bear tags so you can kind of search by that. I wanted to do a listings thing as well where...
like events and that.
Yeah, where you can go, where can I go and see jams play? Or... I live in Sheffield. What's going on in Sheffield in the next few months? Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
Like Resident Advisor is good, but it don't have everything on there. Do you know what I'm saying?
No, no. So, but that takes work from both sides where, you know, if I see something, I'll put it up.
Yeah.
Same way with my Spotify playlist. My Spotify playlist is basically how I've learned how to do all of this, where if I see something, I'll put it up. But I also rely on people telling me as well.
Yeah, because
I will not see everything.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, like I tweeted the other day, like what came out in Grime this week, and Alhan replied to me and said, well, if you have to ask this, we're all fucked, bruv. And I'm like, I hear why you're saying that, but like, there's no central resource for these releases. Do you know what I mean? There's no central, and I will miss tweets. Man are tweeting out like, yeah, my EP's out today, my single's out today. I'll definitely probably follow these guys, but if you tweet it out twice, I probably won't.
It's mad though, because like, even on that level, like the Twitter algorithms can be mad. Like, it doesn't show you the true reflection of what the timeline is. It shows
show
you stuff.
It shows you
what you check for.
Yeah.
So there's definitely bare stuff that
you
don't
see. Or
what
other people are checking for as well. Like it pushes stuff up, and you know that's kind of how it is. Algorithms are a myth. Like they definitely fuck up.
Algorithms are fucked up.
What you want to curate for yourself. Like they don't want you to. These platforms as well. Like we're using them for free. So we're like we're not paying anything in. So I suppose they have to earn money somehow. So
yeah,
that promoted push thing and. You know, influencers and all that, and promoted posts, put money in.
I'm tired of promoted posts.
Trust me.
Tired of it.
Trust me. How much money you got to put into that to just get your little promo videos seen by half the people that even follow you? Facebook's mad. Don't get me started.
I gave up
on
Facebook a time ago, man. There was a time in like, maybe it was like 2015, 16, where they first introduced the live, and like every time I would go on live on the Facebook, the numbers would be dumb.
Yes.
Like stupid, crazy.
Wild.
And then they realised, okay, like you're doing too much. Like now you got
to
pay.
Now you got to pay to promote this. Yeah, same thing. I was doing installs with JD Sports, getting wild numbers. And then suddenly, right, no one's seeing it. But you know what's mad? So you know you go on Facebook, and you're definitely seeing a Unilad video.
Definitely seen
a Unilad video.
100%.
They went bankrupt.
Who went what? Unilad?
Unilad, yeah. Spent too much money. Spent too much. They weren't making it back. And that's a perfect example of like bear, it's like a false economy.
This is the thing about...
Even on record labels, like, my man's got blah, blah, blah plays and...
But that doesn't always translate. And like, this is what I keep trying to have it to explain
to people.
But the
marketing spend is wild. And like, that artist goes... That artist is in debt to the label still, even with a top 10 album or whatever, because they've spent mad P on it.
And that's the mad thing as well. Like, you can spend so much P on marketing your thing, right? It doesn't mean not that even one person's going to buy your thing, fam. Like, that is the harsh reality of it.
Real.
Like, there are artists out there that don't even have 1,000 followers, but I guarantee you every time they're doing a show, it sells out. Do you get what I'm saying? Like, that's the power of, like, interaction. Like, it's more, I think interaction online is more important than numbers. Like, you can have
absolutely
50,000 followers and you cannot talk to one person. It's not gonna make no money.
You see that chick that tried to sell the t-shirts that she had like 1.2 million followers on Instagram. She sold five or something
mad like that. Yeah,
so, do you know what I mean? Like, I'm not saying that they were even fake followers or whatever, but they're just passive followers. They're not invested in what you're doing. And you look at someone like Slow Ty, for example, who come on a completely different tip, but like he's got a massively engaged fan base, doing something in his own lane. And if you want that, you go to him for it, and they definitely are going to him for it. So And eventually people clock on. They start noticing, oh, rah, like, you might not have a quarter of a mil followers or whatever, but...
It grows.
Yeah.
Gradually, it definitely does grow. So, yeah, man.
Yeah, as long as you're consistent with it and keep on trucking, man. I definitely feel like if you're good at something, the only way you fail is by quitting. Do you know what I mean? So, but a lot of people do get discouraged.
But a lot of people want instant grat, though. Like,
yeah.
And, like, I have to... Like, I was having this conversation with someone the other day, like, with Shemzy. He's like, right, do you still think you're going to be doing this thing when you're whatever age? I was like, bro, let's please not forget, yeah, a lot of the artists that you listen to today have been doing this thing for 10 plus years before you even heard of them on the radio. Like, it takes 10 years to make an overnight success, bro. Like, look, Big Nasty, been here for time.
Yeah.
Yeah, Meridian Dan.
Yeah.
Look how long Meridian Dan was here before German Whip come along. Like, yeah. You're only ever one tune away. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, even Skepta's progress was like...
Mad.
It's this continual elevation over a decade. And like, he manages to keep leveling up. And it's like, every new set of fans he acquires, like, must think he's new. Do you know what I mean? They must think he's a new artist when, you know, I can remember him having a rap clash with Jammer back in 03 or whenever the fuck it was. So like, yeah, man, it's wild where... The perception is very different, but yeah, I just think, you know, if you're good at something and you really, really work hard at it, then eventually you will see something back from it. The only decision to make is, can you stick it out? And is that something you're going to see back for it worth your time? And for some people, they get other response, like kids. You ain't got no kids.
Yeah, no, I ain't got no kids, man.
Yeah, do you know what I mean? they get kids or whatever, and like, yeah, you just can't afford to do it anymore.
Yeah.
You've got other responsibilities and what have you, and you have to look in other avenues. Or even you get rewarded more. Like, you might suddenly do the playwright thing might go wild.
And it'll just be more stuff.
Do you know what I mean?
Back into this.
Yeah, but you haven't got the time to put it back into this, so your output of music will go down.
Yeah,
because your work risk reward ratio will. You know, be off, and you'll naturally want to put more time into that than this.
Yeah,
like, even with me, like, I love DJing live. I love it. It's my favorite thing to do. Like, if I could do that, if I could play grime to people that were interested in hearing grime every night of the week for a wage, like, I don't even need the booking fee that I was getting 2 years ago. Just a solid wage, I'd do that because I love it. But those opportunities are not there as much as they were.
Yeah.
And opportunities for me to do the Street Fighter commentary are consistent because that gaming thing it just rolls along.
Mad though. Sometimes you gotta go where life takes you, man.
Yeah, trust.
You just gotta follow it and see what happens.
But as long as you keep the love for the stuff, and you'll always come back to it in some ways.
Yeah, 100%. I don't think I'll ever stop doing grime. I'll be honest, I'll definitely do other stuff, but the grassroots stuff, I love that. Like, I love doing things like Keep Hush and all of that stuff, like, that's for me where the fun is. Do you know what I'm saying?
Wicked. Thank you very much for your time, man. I appreciate
it. Well, come on, meaning to do it for a minute.
And all the best with your podcast as well. What's it called?
Run Your Mouth. Yes, for now. It might change next week.
Have you got any episodes out?
No. So we just done the first two.
Okay,
so you're the second one. Do another one next week. So yeah,
so it's gonna be a weekly show.
Bi-weekly.
Where are you gonna find that?
Bi-weekly.
Okay. I haven't even got a platform for me to find mine. 2 weeks.
Yeah,
I have to wait for mine to come out.
He's saying exclusivity.
That's right, because this ain't coming out for like a week and a half. I'm backing them up because I'm going away.
Boom.
But yeah, man, thank you very much.
Thank you
to everybody already that's been sharing and reviewing and all that malarkey. As I said, if you want to help support the podcast and keep it running so we can improve everything, get better lighting, editing skills, camera angles, all that good stuff. A real studio, so I don't have to mob people. Continually trying to improve. If you want to support that, then the Patreon link is at the bottom of the video on YouTube. But yeah, if you're just listening, I appreciate anyone listening to us waffling on for an hour. It's it's love that you'd even want to do that. So thank you. We'll be back with more. But that has been the Keeping It Grimy podcast with Jams. Make sure you follow him up
at JAMMZ on the Twitter. Everything else is there.
Wicked. Nice one. Take care.
Bow.